This week's episode of Unglossy is dedicated to the memory of Dr. Cynthia Dacow.
This week on Unglossy. How do you define great storytelling?
The way really great stories unfold in my mind is you have a reason. Like you know the reason why you're going in to tell the story, for example. There's a beginning, a middle, an end. You've got your characters lined up. Like, you know, by characters, I just mean like real people who are going to be doing this event anyway, right? So you end up creating your scaffolding, right? You don't go in with a script. You go in with like scaffolding. You know what you're going to hopefully shoot on day one, day two, and you're following this natural story arc. And you create a space where people can just show up authentically as themselves.
From the top.
Yeah.
I'm Tom Frank.
I'm Mickey Fax.
And I'm Jeffrey Sledge.
Welcome to Unglossy, decoding brand and culture. I'm Tom Frank, partner and chief creative officer at Merit Creative. This is Mickey Fax, hip-hop artist and founder and CEO of Pendulum Inc. And that is Jeffrey Sledge, a seasoned music industry veteran who has worked with some of the biggest artists in the business. We're here to explore the moments of vulnerability, pivotal decisions, and creative sparks that fuel the relationship between brand and culture. Get ready for a thought-provoking journey into the heart and soul of branding. The unscripted, unfiltered, and truly unglossy truth. Hello, hello. How are we, guys?
What up, what up, what up?
What's up, man?
It's Mickey.
We are on our next interview this week. We have an amazing guest this time. It is I kind of think the theme is of this entire podcast. It really is about, the theme is culture, right? We talk about brand, we talk about culture, and the uniqueness of this podcast is the unexpected. And I think we have a guest this week that fits that role perfectly. What did you guys think of the great Mags Miller, the director, the producer, the storyteller? She's worked for National Geographic. She's worked for Discovery. And we've had the chance to work together many moons ago on an incredible project in Africa.
The only thing I can say is everybody needs Mags Miller, man. I think she's one of those people that behind the scenes has created one of the most authentic series that I'm interested in watching, not being a part of, Tom.
We'll be getting into Mickey and Jeffrey's recruitment on a very popular show in this episode.
No.
Unless you're dropping us off like in an Amazonian joint with his like tons of honeys.
It's not going to happen.
But I mean, what a great conversation though. And understanding kind of the way she thinks about storytelling, the way she thinks about how she structures the documentaries and the projects that she works on. I don't know. It was a very valuable lesson early in my career. And it was fun to get to share that with you guys today.
Yeah, and she also has an interesting story like herself about, you know, where she grew up and her background and everything. She's very, very interesting.
Very interesting.
I like her a lot.
All right. Yep. So without any further ado, we're going to meet Mags Miller. Mags Miller, how are you? It has been a minute since we last saw one another. How are you?
I'm good. It has been a minute. I mean, I think it's been at least a decade.
Maybe a decade.
You know, I follow you on social.
That's true. So guys, I have to tell you something here. Mags and I share two things. Number one is a birthday. We have the same birthday. I think of you every time that I turn a year older. And number two, she's the only woman I've been imprisoned with in a Nigerian military prison. So I think that's kind of a unique characteristic.
Yeah,
where would different. We like to start? Which story would we like to start with?
What's the birthday? What day is it?
May 16th. It's coming up pretty soon.
All right.
Yeah.
And is Tom older? Is Tom older?
I think are we the exact same age?
I don't know.
I don't know.
Well, she can't tell her age. Yeah. She can't tell her age.
Oh no.
It's Tom.
So, but I'm allowed to tell them. I might be a twin. Yes, we look a lot alike.
How old are you, Tom?
I'm 50.
Okay. Mags.
I'm older.
Okay. I thought we were exactly the same age.
You look amazing.
See, you look better for your age.
Just by a year.
Oh, just by a year. All right.
Thank you.
Yes.
Amazing.
So Nigerian prison. What? Okay, we pretty much know what Tom probably got locked up for. Exactly.
No, no, no. We were locked up for the same thing. We were together.
So tell us the story.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm gonna start here. I'm gonna start here. The reason I reached out to you, Mags, as you know, is we worked on an unbelievable project together for the Getty Foundation, and it was about, man, it was almost like what, 18, 16 years ago. It was a long time ago. Was it that long ago? Yes, it was.
Yeah, 2008.
And so for those who have never heard of this organization, Getty Foundation began in 2002 by Jennifer Douglas, Dr. Jennifer Douglas, and they were like a pioneer. It was a non-governmental organization in Nigeria that really helped underserved and highly stigmatized populations. And they had a focus really on treatment, quality treatment for HIV and AIDS, training, advocacy, research, all based out of Nigeria. And I was introduced to Getty through their unbelievable executive director, Dr. Cynthia Takayo. I think I always say her name wrong, but Takayo, who may she rest in peace, recently passed away from pneumonia. She had Parkinson for years. And she was somebody who literally, I think, changed my life. One of those people that just literally changed my life. That project was probably the first project that I went overseas and did something totally insane. And it opened my eyes up to a whole different world. Like seeing people in Nigeria and things that we take for granted a lot of the times, like the ability to go to school. Like we all think, oh, going to school is a drag. But at the same time, these kids, it's a privilege to go to school. And these kids are walking around with literally no shoes on. They're smiling and having fun. And it kind of reminds you every day that when we're dealing with this, you know, ridiculous stuff, that there are people that are smiling that have things far worse than we do. And that is ultimately how we met.
Yeah. I mean, I got pulled into the project, through Dave Braun.
That's right.
Who introduced
That's right.
Us. And great guy. I've never worked with them since. but I have been, so I grew up in Africa. I grew up in Nigeria, Tanzania, and Zimbabwe. Okay. So like, that's my,
Matt, let me ask a quick question. Cause, always a thing. Cause I remember tangent years ago when John Kerry was running for president, his wife is from Tanzania, I think. She's a Hines.
Hines family, yeah.
She's definitely from Africa. I think it's Tanzania. And I remember she was doing a speech in front of like a whole black crowd. And she was like, da, 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 da. And just like you, I am an African-American. I was like, she is, though. She's from Africa. You know, do you consider yourself African American?
No, I don't, because, probably because I was trained not to. Do I feel like I resonate and really, when I'm in Africa, do I feel like I'm at home? Yeah, 100%. Do I think that that gives me the right to say that I'm African American? Not necessarily, because my roots don't tie back to Africa. Right. And so I was born in the States. My parents are American. I just happened to be lucky enough that they took me over there when I was so young, and like all my experiential learning moments, like my first schooling, all my first memories were Africa. And when we moved away, like I fought my parents to try and stay there. Like it was like all I could do to go back. And then when I came to the States, we moved to DC and I went through like massive culture shock. Like this, you don't get any sympathy because people are like, what? You're totally, you know, you're white, you're American. And I was like, I know. And now I'm super confused because I feel like ripped between these like two cultures that that's tough. But I do not consider myself African American. I consider myself actually a global citizen.
Oh, I like that.
I'm old school. That's why I still call myself black, because I think African American can be very confusing. When Kerry's wife did that, I was like, but anyway, we're going way off on a tangent. But
but that's a really interesting one because they're like, it's like I've had this conversation with tons of people about like white Africans, right? Like people who have been in South Africa and Southern Africa, all over Africa for like generation upon generation upon generation. And people are like, well, go back.
You're like, this is home.
And it's like,
well, is that a term? White African? I've never heard that before.
We're just making up.
We're making words up. I like it. All right, Mag. So you have to tell the story because I think I have told this story so many times of how you got me arrested in Nigeria and I had to spend time in a jail. And the only thing that I was worried about is there was one bed in this jail and it was a big jail. And I was like, there's no way I'm getting anywhere near that. I'm staying as far away as that from humanly possible. And I can't not wait to get out of here.
Yeah. See, now I want to hear your
version. You want to hear my version of it? See, my version is Mags decided that we went out scouting for this documentary and she was throwing her camera around all over the place. And she started pointing to a building that apparently we were not supposed to be filming. And before I knew it, I was surrounded by guys with machine guns. And I can remember very, very vividly you telling me on the plane, whatever you do, don't ever give up your passport. And the first thing they asked for when being pointed at by a machine gun was, please give us your passport. And so I didn't know what to do. I gave up my passport. I saw her give her passport up. So I gave mine up. They carted us off. We went into some weird prison. I don't think we were actually in the same cell either, right? We were in two different cells. So I didn't even know where you were. And I sat in this cell for a while until a general walks in. And the general walked into the cell and he said, sir, come with me. And I was like, oh God, now what's going to happen? So I sit down and he wants to see my camera and all the pictures I'd taken. So I start flipping through my pictures and somehow we started talking about football. And he was a huge Pittsburgh Steelers fan. And there was not a person who knew more about the Pittsburgh Steelers than me. And so we started talking. I'm flying through photos and I knew exactly the photos he wanted to see because he wanted to see if we were taking photos of the ministry of something. And so I had him going on all sorts of football stuff. And before you know it, he wasn't even paying attention to the photos. We got through the photos. And then sure enough, I got thrown back in the cell and I didn't know what was going to happen. And then Cynthia walked in. And Cynthia, remember, we had in our line items for that job, we had bribery money. And she came in and paid them off. I called it bribery money because I like that makes it sound better. And she ended up paying them. And then we got out. And I didn't see you until we were walking out of the jail and you were there again. So I don't have no idea what happened on your end.
We have very different
Okay, let's go.
No, this is amazing. I feel like we're in a court case.
All right.
And like so different. Okay.
Your version.
So yes, we were shooting. We were filming. I shouldn't say shooting.
Yeah, that's bad.
We were filming. And there's this great rock. So we were in Abuja. And so there's this rock and it's very much like, you know, if you were in DC, you would shoot the Washington Monument or film the Washington Monument. This is like that. So we think, all right, well, we should probably get some footage of this because why not? So we get out and we're filming. Prior to that, we had been driving around the parliamentary buildings and there happened to be a protest / riot going on. We didn't need that footage, but I can't help myself but to film stuff. So I had this other tiny little camera. So I was filming that. And
out of the side of a window in a moving car, by the way.
Right. Yes. Like really sort of, we didn't need it. Anyway, so we are filming the rock and this car pulls up and he says, you know, you're not allowed to be filming. And that's when it was, you know, I was like, just, you know, I hate to use the word bribery money, but it was like, listen, he just wants a bribe. So we agreed with our local driver and Cynthia that that's what we were going to do. We were going to just like offer him some cash and he would drive away. Boy, we picked the wrong guy to do that with. He was like, you need to follow me. We're going straight into the barracks. He takes us into this barracks. And I was like, even me, like, and I, you know, Nigeria of all places, like that was my first memories. Like Nigeria is the most like beautifully chaotic, insane country that I've ever been to.
I was a complete fish out of water.
Oh yeah. No, imagine Tom. I mean, Tom's been to like Tom's been to like Cancun and Toronto at this point. Like, for real. So that's why I was telling you those tips, like don't give your passport away, like all these things. So we end up, and I was like, oh God, we are screwed. And I remember us being in the same room. They were trying to get the footage. I was trying to explain to them. I was like, we can't let them see the footage of filming Parliament and the protests, because then we're definitely going to be thrown away.
We're going to be beheaded.
And no one, yeah, no one spoke English. And so, and of course, that's a, you know, that shame on us for not being able to communicate in different ways. So they're just like yelling at us. The guns were definitely there for sure. Tom's just like, what's happening? So I'm like asking and more for more and more like a higher ranking person. I was like, we need to have someone to speak English. Then to Cynthia was trying to get, it was very chaotic. And I remember you did leave. I stayed in this room that I remember with like seven old dirty mattresses. And I was like, we're going to be living.
See, they kept you in a nice room. I went in behind bars. I had bars closed behind me.
That is crazy. Yeah, they, I think they, because I had the cameras, so they kept trying to force me to show footage and delete it. And of course, I was like, oh, I can't do this. Anyway, so a guy walks in. It's probably the same guy that came to you. So he and I start talking, and I just said to him, you're like, I live in DC. He's like, oh, I went to American University. And I was like, that's amazing. So we started to talk and I explained to him how this camera and what we were doing. And that was it. But it was like 7 hours after we'd been pulled over. Like I thought, oh God, this is a locked up abroad. I was like, okay, so how can I get this to my friends and make locked up abroad? How are we going to get out of here?
Yeah, because that's the show I wanted to always be on.
Right. And I was like, Tom is going to break in a minute. Like he... It's terrible. So we did get out without, I think we just paid a little bit of like a fine.
Yeah.
But we got out and then we had another week of filming.
We had another week of filming, but we hired guards from that point on. Because if you remember, we had two guards with us the rest of the time. So it made me feel a little better.
Yeah.
How long were you guys locked up for?
I'd say 7 hours.
Oh, I think I always tell the story of like 7 days, but no, it was only about 7 or 8 hours.
That's not that bad. You know, New York is 24 hours.
I've been through that. I've definitely been through that.
Yeah. And it sounded like y'all conditions were a little bit better. Did you have a cell to yourself?
No, Tom? There were other people in the cell. That's what I was worried about.
Did you kick it with them, or you were just kind of sitting quiet in the corner?
Oh no! I went after the biggest guy to make sure he knew I'm the boss here. Oh yeah! I took a fork and broke it and tried to go after him. That's what I had been taught.
That's funny.
Yeah. Did they feed you, Tom? Did they feed you guys?
I don't remember getting fed.
And Mags, were you alone in the cell as well?
No. Well, I was never put into like an actual cell. I was in the room with the guys with the guns. They were trying to figure out what to do with us and how big of a threat we were. So I was constantly like talking and trying to figure out what's our next move. How can we do this? And my problem was if I could get to a cell phone that I could figure this out, I could sort it out because I just know people to call, right? Like you just, but I couldn't, like no one would give me the phone. And I was like that, if we can't get to a phone, we are completely, we're going to be here and we're going to be lost because no one would have known our track that day, right? Because we were just on a scout that day. We didn't have a schedule. Like we hadn't been in touch and it was just the two of us with Cynthia.
So
wow.
See, that's what Mags was doing. I was trying to make friends with the Aryan Nation to stay alive. That's what I was trying to do.
So
all right.
So Mags, being a television producer and stuff like that, do you come across those type of wild scenarios all the time? Like looking at some of the shows we've worked on, it's not like you're working in LA, you know what I mean? You're always kind of out and about, you know? So is there other experiences like we had crazy things happen like that?
Yes. There have been some high risk, I guess they would call it. So I, in 2009, actually the year after we did Get A, I embedded with the Marines in Afghanistan in Helmand Province. So in 2009, I don't remember, President Obama, we did a surge into southern Afghanistan, and there was a whole new Marine base that was open called Camp Leatherneck. And for some reason, National Geographic was like, we've got to do a film on this amazing new camp that the Marines are building. And I was like, okay, this can't be like a home building show. Like, we're not going to war to show how like a camp was built. We need to like tell a war. Like, I wanted to embed with the Marines to tell their story from a very human perspective versus like a news war journalist. Let's just say there was quite a bit of therapy that happened after I got back from that, because I was with them for 5 weeks.
For a minute.
Wow.
A lot can happen in 5 minutes.
Absolutely. And especially, you know, like,
yeah, a lot did happen in 5 weeks. And so there was, so that was pretty high risk. And then, you know, a couple other things. You know, I enjoy it. I think part of it is, like, I was telling Tom yesterday, I get really calm in chaos because I think certain people are wired that way. And I think that, you know, when you are raised in change and high intensity communities, like, it just, you're like, oh, this feels comfortable. Whether that's healthy or not is a different conversation. But understanding that about yourself and being able to like translate that into something where you can actually then help other people or help tell stories, that to me has been like really something that it sort of happened along the way. And then I woke up and I was like, oh, that's what I do. Like,
so you kind of just fell into it. And all of a sudden now you are somebody who chaos and telling really authentic, unscripted stories. I mean, those are kind of the two characteristics of the projects that you end up taking on. Is that an accurate depiction?
That would be accurate. Yes.
Wait, I want to ask you one question. As back to the Afghanistan part, how was it being there? Not as an American, but just as a woman, because obviously I know the cultures are so different. I want to know about that.
Right. That's such a good question. Okay. So that was one of the concerns, was I needed to have a male men. Like, I needed a male crew because they were worried that the Afghan men would not respond to me, wouldn't answer questions, you know, it would be very different. The best part was the guys found it fascinating. They're not allowed to interact with Afghan women, but I'm like, I'm an alien to them. So there are no rules. So all of them were like trying to take selfies with me. I got the best interviews because it was like, yeah, it was amazing. And it was in the southern region. And so I'm not sure if that dictated like a different behavior, but it was, they really opened up. I was shocked, and really flattered. I have some of the best selfies of like these guys who were just like, oh my God, I get to like touch a woman, like put my arm. I always did keep my head covered, my shoulders covered, my knees, like, you know, just be respectful. Obviously. And of course, you're in a war zone. So it's not like I'm running around in a bikini or something. That'd be stupid. But that was very cool. And the other component that was really advantageous that I didn't think about was I was then allowed into the homes with the women. Like, I could go in by myself, like none of my male crew could. But once you build trust with like the Afghan men, they then can, they had to grant me permission to go in. And so then I was allowed to sit with a female interpreter with these women and just talk to them. And like, it was incredible. That was very cool. But there was a big concern, and we didn't know how I was going to be taken, you know, as a woman, and what kind of extra risk that would pose for the crew. And it was only, I had a camera person, sound person, and another producer. It was just the four of us. So, yeah.
Wow. That's interesting, man.
Wow.
I think my definition of fun is different than a lot of people.
It was crazy fun.
Exactly.
Now, the other show that I'm kind of fascinated with that I need to hear some stories about is Naked and Afraid. Like, to me, that might be the most insane show I've ever seen. I kind of want to see maybe Mickey and Jeffrey do an episode of Naked and Afraid. We put them in the middle of nowhere and see if they can survive. How great would that be?
No, it would not be great at all.
First of all,
yes.
Why are we volunteered by
to be butt ass naked in somewhere? Hey, yo.
So that's the premise of the show. You're like butt naked alone in the middle of nowhere.
And somehow people are fascinated with this, right? I mean, this is a show that's been on for a long time.
And you have to survive in the space that you're in for how long?
21 days.
Oh,
naked.
Naked. 21 days with nothing but, so you are basically, you're given three items. All three are pretty essential for your survival.
Do you get to pick them or do they give them to you?
You mean the contestants?
Yeah, the contestants, yeah.
Okay. So they can make a wish list, like three items that they want. The production crew ultimately decides because we know, are they going to need to boil their water? If so, they're going to need a way to start fire.
Hmm.
Right. So they don't know all of the elements going into a location. They just know like a general region. And so there's a collaborative take, but ultimately it's the production crew that we want them to succeed. Right. We want to see the struggle and the ebb and flow because it's fascinating to watch. It's really about like the mental strength or belief. But I'll tell you what, it is, it's amazing to watch because people are like, oh my God, what's it like, you know, seeing naked people walking around? And I'm like, I'll tell you what, the first thing you think about is how are these two people going to survive? Because they've never met before they meet each other in whatever the situation is naked.
Wait a minute. So you drop them in two different locations and the first time they meet is the first, I mean, that's it? They've never met each other before?
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
Okay. Okay.
I want Mickey and Jeffrey. This would be the hip hop edition of Naked and Afraid.
Chill.
Relax. Max. Ever. It's never gonna happen. Let me ask you this. So, Mags. So, the three items. What are the most popular three items that are dropped off with people? Obviously, I'm guessing a knife and a lighter, right?
Machete. Oh, no lighter. But you can have like a flint.
A flint.
Right? Because you got to be able to start the fire. You can't just have a lighter.
So
that's too easy.
Spark the thing to start the fire.
Spark the flame.
Yeah, and you got to be able to find like your kindling and all that stuff. I don't know, wherever you are. And then I'd say typically like some sort of vessel for water, like to hold water. So like a little pot, a machete, and
that's it.
You're not bringing your pendulum ink hat. That's not one of your items, Mickey.
So wait. Is it a man and a woman, or is it two men, two women? Like
man and woman, of course. You know, you got to make it interesting.
Adam and Eve.
Man and woman.
I'm assuming, but naked, do they be hooking up out there and all that in the woods?
They have to be.
There's no way. They're on TV and they're trying to survive.
The cameras go off at some point.
Oh, no, they don't. That's the crazy part. So they're filmed like at nighttime also, like the infrared cameras, like they are. I mean, has it happened?
Of
yeah.
Of course.
Does it happen a lot? But also like it's kind
nasty.
Of, it's really
nasty.
Gross.
21 days in the woods and you haven't showered. You haven't. Ugh.
Yes. I mean, the first 2 days, you probably won't catch a wind.
Yeah.
After that,
day seven
probably
is like,
not going to happen.
Shit, literally.
Well, and also like the personalities are sometimes like, you know, and it's interesting. You can tap out, right? So you can, if you get to the point, you're like, I can't do this. And then the solo person, like the person has to decide, like, am I staying out here alone to try and survive for however long? And it's pretty, I mean, it's super intense. I actually have a lot of respect for the show because it is very real. Like, it's hard to find TV shows that are like super authentic and real. And those are the shows that I love because like, you know, when you're working on the show, yes, I am seeing them every day, whatever, but you never talk about the time. You're not allowed to talk about the weather. You're never allowed to like eat anything near them, drink anything. Like you are not allowed to.
Do you interact with them at all?
Yeah, I mean, for like doing like a morning check-in and a night. So you have, because you have to have like those interview bites that, like, what are your goals for the day? And it's so funny because especially as they start, you know, basically slowly dying, essentially, because they're starving to death because you can't find food. Yeah. They're like, yeah, we're going to do this today. I'm going to do this today. And like, you'll just watch the sun go up and down. And you're like, you didn't do anything, but like, lay
exhausted.
Because they get so tired.
Yeah. Wow.
And I'm like, well, maybe tomorrow you'll go buy, you'll find some more firewood, and or maybe you'll find some grapes, or I don't know. Like, what
or
do
you, a boar or something, or a turkey to kill and eat. I'd be, no, it doesn't happen. I'd be looking for food.
Well, they are looking for food, but it's not like wild boar. Or number one, they're running around a lot. And like, how are you capturing?
I got a machete.
That's, yeah, that would be. But I mean, okay. There's, yeah.
Okay. Do the contestants get paid? Is there a grand prize?
It's not like a big, no. They do get a stipend, essentially. I would say.
But why are they on the show?
They're not doing it for the money. They're doing it because they want to prove something.
It's like the people climb Mount Everest, I mean, and stuff like that. They want to do it to kind of prove a point.
Wow.
Yeah, it's much more of like it for them. It's like this incredible, like,
existential experience.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's interesting. And I will tell you, stereotypically, I just have to point this out. 9 times out of 10, it's the guys that tap out. It's the guys that come in like, oh, I'm going to kill this, and this is going to be amazing.
Of course.
And the women are like, oh, man, you know, I think I'll do okay. And the women crush it. And the men are like, I'm really tired. Like, wow. I thought I was going to be able to hunt. And I was like, have you not seen this before? Like, use your bare hands. Anyway, but it's interesting because it really tests you as a human being. I'd never want to be tested in that way. Like, I have no desire ever.
Not interested. No.
So the stipend. What is the stipend?
You're really, Mickey's thinking about doing this now.
Listen, for the 3 weeks, I would say that most people, to put it in perspective, most people, I mean, maybe they're not making the amount in the 3 weeks because they're taking off work too. Like,
yeah.
So I'm thinking it's kind of like, it's just, you're basically being paid to be out there.
It's just what you would have made if you were working the 5 days a week or whatever.
I mean, depending on your job, obviously. But I mean, this is not life changing.
Yeah.
So, okay.
Not life changing money.
And what network does this, I want to watch this.
Oh, it's on Discovery.
You can watch, there's how many seasons? There is a ton of them. It's been on for a while.
13 seasons. I mean, it's like you could just start booming now.
Sit back, get some popcorn, and watch.
There is. Yeah, now there's.
This is on Disney Plus.
Discovery.
All right. So I need to ask you this. The one thing that I'm seeing carrying across all of this is you're not a normal, I don't say that in a bad way. You're not a normal filmmaker. You film like real stories. Like, how do you define great storytelling?
That's a good one. How do I define great storytelling?
Yeah.
I feel like it's something you kind of know it, right? You don't always know it going in. So we were talking a little bit about this the other day with some friends of mine. And it's the way really great stories unfold in my mind is you have a reason. Like you know the reason why you're going in to tell the story, for example. There's a beginning, a middle, and end. You've got your characters lined up. Like, you know, by characters, I just mean like real people who are going to be doing this event anyway, right? So you end up creating your scaffolding, right? You don't go in with a script. You go in with like scaffolding. You know what you're going to hopefully shoot on day one, day two, and you're following this natural story arc. And you create a space where people can just show up authentically as themselves. And you make them feel safe, number one. Like, there's no judgment. We're just here to literally like follow and document you. I may throw in a question, pepper in a question, and make sure that we're capturing it with cameras. So I might ask you to do something like if, you know, we missed something or whatever. But ultimately, I think authentic storytelling is really tapping into and honoring the person that you're with or the people that you're with to let them tell the story. and to follow that natural story arc. So, I mean, and it can be like silly stuff too, you know, like it can be silly stories, it can be like Hoarding Buried Alive I did for 2.5 years. And I always go back to that show as being a real turning point as far as how I produced. Hoarding Buried Alive.
Yeah, I was going to say, go back to that because the name alone makes me nervous.
Right. That was a huge hit. The interesting thing, and most people didn't know anything about most people. A lot of people didn't know about hoarding and the fact that it really an addiction and it has all of those traits and triggers. And so I was walking into these homes with people who had essentially hit rock bottom. I mean, if you're asking a film crew to come in and document your messy life, like your filthy life that has destroyed a lot of your relationships, you're pretty much at rock bottom. What I learned there is ask the tough questions. Ask the questions that you think are uncomfortable for you as a person, right? They're because they know they have a problem. It's almost rude not to lean in and ask the uncomfortable, tough questions. And as human beings, we dance around tough issues a lot of the times because it makes us uncomfortable. It doesn't make them uncomfortable, it makes us uncomfortable. So you got to check yourself as far as like being really uncomfortable with them in that space and being like, listen, I'm asking this question because I see you and I see what you're struggling and I want to understand why this is happening. And 9 times out of 10, I would get a response where someone would break down. They would thank me for asking. Like it was shocking because I thought they would be offended by the question. I thought I might hurt their feelings. And they were so grateful that I'd actually taken that leap and seen the struggle that they were in. And so I think that's the thing is like people just want to be seen and heard and being able to create a space where they know that you're doing it from a place of not of compassion versus I gotcha, right? Like that's my thing. Like Osa and Tom, I have a do no harm policy. So like I don't make table flipping shows. I don't make shows that put words in other people's mouths. I'm not trying to like pit people against each other. Like I can't live with myself if that's the kind of stuff. Like just me personally as a human. I also don't do true crime because I can't live in that headspace because I think like I know people do bad things.
Can mess with
already.
You. Yeah.
I don't think that'd be a healthy space. So for me, authentic storytelling is being able to create basically a place where people can come, tell their story, feel seen, feel heard, and then know that we're putting that out into the world. And then other people can see themselves through that story
kind of
as well.
Respecting them.
Yeah. Oh my God. Completely. Yeah. Meeting everybody where they're at, you know, like, and for me, that's such a gift because I get to meet so many people. You know, like it's and so many different walks of life and people are fascinating. They are crazy and fascinating. Everybody has like an amazing story.
Everybody's weird in their own way. Right. And weird's not a bad thing. They're just you're all different. And that's what makes humans so fascinating is they're all just you just never can tell. You know, the one thing throughout my career, I feel like I've picked things up from the different people I've worked with throughout the years. And you said it very well. The thing I picked up from you and about storytelling was don't go into it with necessarily an expectation. Go into it with an idea of how you're going to get from point A to point B, but let the story unfold. And that's what I saw when I worked with you. And I think I've carried that on throughout my career in anything I've ever done is you almost have to let the story unfold in some ways and not push it in one way or the other because it wouldn't be authentic then.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, we as human beings, like we want to know the outcome, right? We are wired to want to know like what's happening next. I want to know like where are we going with this? What's my purpose? Why am I here? And we get so trapped by how we need it to happen because this is how we pictured it that we forget to like actually check in with ourselves in the moment and be like, listen, I know I know where I can make it go. But let's see where it's really going to go.
Yeah.
Because if I'm controlling the narrative, it's then my story. It's not the story of the other person. And so it's like, it goes against the grain. And so you have to check yourself. And I was talking with a dear friend last night about producing. And I said, you know, it is being able to give up control that we as humans feel like we need in order for the beauty of the moment to unfold. And I've never been disappointed when I can catch myself from trying to control a situation. It always turns out way better. And it's always when you think everything is falling apart that it all comes together. Right? Like,
that's kind of life in a nutshell right there.
No, yeah. That's exactly it. Exactly it. Yeah. Yes. And so like when I was on hoarding, I remember again, hoarding, geez, who would have thought? I remember telling people, I said, you can't have a breakthrough without a breakdown. Right. And so a lot of people, and it's an extreme show, and most of my shows aren't like that emotional. Some of them are, but most are not. But again, that is such a great tenet for life, because we hold on, we're like gripping on for dear life. This is what I know. This is what's normal, whatever. And it's once you sort of like have that breakdown, like you just can't fake it any longer. You can't do it. You have this breakthrough and you get to the other side and you're like, damn, that was way better than I thought
it was going to be.
And you survived. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's epic. So yes, it's a lot of like life lessons. It's just a lot of, and I feel so lucky to do what I do because it's so much fun. Like I've done a shit ton of food shows also. Like I am not a foodie, full disclosure. I am a eat for function type of person. I know what I like, but I did all these food shows and chefs are these incredible artists in their own right. Mm-hmm. You go into a kitchen and you're just like, holy, I had so much respect for them. And like, I learned a ton and I got to eat amazing food, like all over the world. And, you know, kitchens are crazy places with intense personalities. So I feel so spoiled in the fact that I get to continue to meet these incredible people, make a difference in the world. And, I don't know, have great stories and like connect with people like you. Like, how crazy is this?
How crazy is this? So speaking of life lessons, though, I'm curious. Mm-hmm. I feel like when we did Getty, right, they were kind of ahead of their time. This was an organization that was using like a documentary, in essence, to get out to the world. And they did it in a time when we didn't have the same kind of connection we have with people. We didn't have social media. We didn't have the mass amount of people that could actually have viewed this thing. Nowadays, that's changed dramatically. What advice would you give to like brands and organizations who want to use this kind of form of storytelling to get their product out there, to get their cause out there? Like, what do they have to think about in terms of to do it right?
Yeah, well, boy, there has been a huge shift. I mean, I definitely see branding, marketing. It is because that is the wave of, I don't want to even say the future. That's the wave of the present day.
Now. Yeah.
Companies are trying to figure out how to make their mark, how to capture an audience. And it is through it's basically through shorts. So I'm seeing a lot of companies, a lot of brands either partnering with production companies that do, I want to say like higher end content storytelling. So you find your character, you know what you want to tell, but you find that person. Storytelling is all about connection. It's all about finding the people, the voice, who is going to carry your message forward, who is going to present it, and in what way, like what makes it the best. Who you are, you're making these shorts, essentially, like short documentaries about someone's experience with, adventure with, moments, time with, whatever the product may be. And it's also not in your face, right? So it's
It's a soft sell. Yeah.
Soft sell. People are sick and tired of, you know, nobody watches commercials anymore.
Yeah.
Right. Like I ended up watching something the other night on regular TV and I was like, oh my God, I have not seen a
commercial. All these commercials keep coming up every 5 minutes.
Right. So nowadays there's a lot of sponsorship. And so it's, I did a half hour show for Nat Geo on the past, present, and future of coffee. And Green Mountain was the main, like a main funder. Mm. We didn't have to, you know, beat it over the head. Like it was a soft sell, right? And it was important for them as a brand to get it out there in the storytelling sense. I think higher end content is expected. I think it's also easier to make that with the advancement of cameras mm-hmm. and all the technology that we have. It's companies like, you know, North Face and Patagonia that have all of these different components and elements of media already built in, right? Because they understand the power of storytelling as it relates to the lifestyle that they are helping to provide and reaching the people that are their audience.
Yeah.
Their customers, basically.
I think in some respects, it's the power of content, right? If you think about Getty back in that day, that was and that ended up being like a, I don't remember exactly, an 18 minute mini documentary. But what we didn't do back then that we could do now, and maybe we go back to them and say this, is imagine the number of shorts that we could have pulled from that, like the moments. There were so many like really powerful moments that, and Mickey and I have talked a lot about this, about, you know, the end product is maybe not as powerful as all of the little snippets that you could use and get out there through all the various social channels. And it all of a sudden becomes a wealth of content. So you produce one thing, but you're getting much more out of it than just the finished product. And that's where I think the power of those moments and that kind of that arc of the story and how you can split that up and use it across all the various platforms.
Definitely. I mean, I think that, you know, nowadays nobody is doing anything without thinking about how's it going to look on Insta? How's it going to look on Facebook?
Short.
How are you going to, all of the, you know, the outs, the BTS. So like all the behind the scenes stuff, people love that. Yeah. And that's definitely a style that people feel connected to and that it resonates with them. And so, I mean, brands nowadays, if they're smart, they are thinking strategically about how can we have a storytelling component to our campaign.
Yeah.
Because it's about the human connection. And I think that, you know, that's what people turn to all the time is how do I feel less alone in a way? How am I feeling seen? Where is my community? And I guess it's that blessing and curse of the internet, really, is we're now all so connected and yet we feel really disconnected. And so people are like turning to visual media to try and find themselves and see themselves in other ways and places. And I do think that, you know, nobody's writing a paper anymore.
Yeah.
People watch everything. They do.
Yeah.
There's a show that's either now or in the past that you watch and you say, you wish you would have done. If there one show that's like, damn, I wish I would have thought of that, or I wish I would have worked on that.
That's a tough one. I have to say,
okay, no. That's cool. That's cool too.
Wow.
I will tell you honestly, like I come up with the ideas that like nobody greenlights. And I have worked on pilots that I have loved. And I was like, this is going to make an exceptional series. And they never get greenlit. And I understand why. But, you know, some of the shows that I did that did get greenlit, I'm like, oh, that was surprising. But there are scripted shows that I love, but I don't do scripted stuff. So you know, that's not my genre. But I mean, I appreciate it. I have so much respect for it. It's a different beast.
It's just a different beast altogether. Yeah.
Totally. Yeah. I have so much respect for it. But yeah, the budgets are really different too. I'd like
that. The budget might be nice. We're talking a lot about storytelling and connecting with people and unscripted. And we were all at Mickey's Pendulum Inc. graduation about a month ago. And you put together a documentary about that first year for these students, which was incredibly powerful. It was unexpected. I didn't realize the extent of the story that you were about to tell. And I just wanted to give you the chance to talk about that for a second, because it seems like it's very much in line with exactly what we're talking about here and telling a story about your brand through the eyes of these characters that have went through it and graduated and the emotions they felt through the experience.
Mags, I own the very first ever school for hip hop and lyricism. And we teach strictly how to write rhymes better, the mental health aspect of it, and how to actually deliver what you're saying, along with the business of music and content creation. So the interesting thing about it is everything is online. And, you know, in this post-pandemic realm and world, feels almost like people would say, well, how can somebody have any kind of emotions when dealing with something that you see on on Zoom every week. And the reality is we've stopped suicides, we've helped divorces, and we've, you know, helped people grow in their space and in their own talent day after day. And in our documentary, you get a chance and the ability to see these students speak highly of the program and how they were able to transform their lives and their talents to not only be better artists, but also better human beings. I would love if you were to watch the documentary. Obviously, it's only 1 hour. We're trying to extend it. We're going to probably follow 2 students, one from Bermuda and one from Minnesota. The guy in Minnesota, he was actually in a psych ward, and we helped him to get out of the psych ward by being in our class and developing him, who he is.
That's exactly it. It's so funny because you were talking about it, and I was like, oh my God, I want to see this. I love that, because that's the power of storytelling, and it's inspiring and it connects. And that's awesome. Like, I love that. And especially investing in kids, right? And being able to inspire kids, like, that's the future. Like, that's what we all want to be able to do is make the world a little bit better, right? And it is one person at a time. Like, it's that ripple effect. You drop that stone into the lake and into the ocean, and you don't know who you're going to impact. You don't know how your kindness will then trickle down. And it's okay. You don't need to know. You just need to know that in that moment, you made a difference in that one person's life. I would love to see that documentary, and I would love to, like, I don't know. I love talking about this stuff. So, I mean, storytelling is so powerful.
I'll send the link to Tom.
Yeah, make sure she gets it. And, awesome. And Mag, you're right. We could sit here, I think, and talk all day if we wanted. But let me end with this. You've worked on so many different projects with so many different brands and so many different organizations. If you had to look at the world and there was one organization out there, one brand out there that has to take note of Mags Miller because you could do a story, you could tell their story in a way that nobody else could, who would it be?
Oh my God, I'm going through the Rolodex of all the people that I would love to. I mean, it's like there are so many worthwhile. So, okay, you're talking brands, right?
You can go anywhere you want with this.
Oh my God, Tom, you should have told me about this one beforehand.
I mean, rattling them off.
Okay. So I think that, like Patagonia, I have like so much respect for like the work that they're doing in the environmental space. Do they need me? Probably not, because they're already really well staffed. Then I think of like World Kitchen, Jose Andreas's team. I think that they're doing incredible work. I think that other brand, like that I would think that was fun, because then I'm like, oh, what do I want to be doing? This is, I'm like North Face. Like, I'm sort of outdoor adventure type skewing. Clearly. I mean, obviously, and to be fair, I did listen to your last podcast. I mean, Red Bull is killing it in that space for sure. You know, Red Bull definitely is very, very smart in the way they market it. Who needs me? I mean, everybody needs me.
Everybody needs Mags Miller. Is there a better way to end it than right there?
I think that's the one.
Oh, I love when we come up with a title live right in the interview. Everyone needs Mags Miller. Mags, thank you. I have loved reconnecting with you over the last 2 days. We need to do it more often. And we got to go get a project that can change my life as much as that first project we did in Nigeria many, many moons ago. So thank you. I have loved getting this talk to you.
Yeah.
Well, I got to thank all you guys. I just love what you're doing. So keep it up, and we will definitely get a crazy project on the books.
We'll get a crazy project, and we'll have to get your honest review of Pendulum Inc., the documentary.
I am honest, if nothing else. I am always honest.
I love that.
From a compassionate space, but always honest.
And last statement, if there's any way you can get Mickey and Jeffrey on Naked and Afraid,
Yeah, come on, man. Can you chill?
Oh, I can make that happen.
No, you can't.
We'll take the podcast on the road, fellas. I'll be off camera. I'll just document everything. I'll be eating.
Nah, Mags already said they don't got the budget, man. They don't got the stipend, man. I got to run a school, man. I'm sorry. I don't know if I can do it.
All right, folks. That's our show. Tune in to Unglossy, Decoding Brand and Culture on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. And follow us on Instagram at UnglossyPod to join the conversation. Until next time, I'm Tom Frank.
I'm Jeffrey Sledge.
Smicky! That was good.